Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When most people hear the word sanctuary, they think of a place of safety, or if your brain is consumed by politics, you may associate that word with immigration. Cities deeming themselves sanctuary cities pledge not to cooperate with officials attempting to apprehend those who entered the country illegally or who overstayed their welcome. But now that word, sanctuary, is acquiring another association. Around the country, towns and counties are declaring themselves Second Amendment sanctuaries, pledging not to enact or enforce laws they believe violate the right to bear arms. In North Carolina, that's happened in Cabarrus, Cleveland, Catawba, Lincoln, and Union counties, and just last night, Gaston County brought the issue to a vote. The Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution reads, "A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." Clearly, places in the country who have pledged their allegiance to the Second Amendment are focusing on the last part of that clause, the part that talks about the right to keep and bear arms. They're ignoring the militia part. So what does it mean to be a Second Amendment sanctuary? Is this just politics, symbolism, or something more? To help us explore that, we've invited a constitutional scholar who specializes in the Second Amendment to be with us. Daryl Miller is the Melvin G. Shim Professor of Law at Duke University and co-director of the Duke Center for Firearms Law. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you with us, even if it's by phone. In our Spirit Square studio is Chad Brown, a Republican on the Gaston County Commission and one of three co-sponsors of the resolution that came before the board last night. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
And Democratic State Representative Christy Clark represents House District 98. She's a former leader of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, which advocates stricter gun laws. Thank you for being here, too.
Good morning.
If you'd like to join our conversation, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. And you can watch at least three of us here this morning on Facebook Live. So, Chad, how did the vote go last night?
The vote was unanimous. It was
in favor.
It was in favor. A lengthy meeting that went on for some business portion of what was going on. But once it got down to after the citizens' comments portion was pretty lengthy because we had a lot of people. There were people in favor, and there were people opposed to the opinion of what was going on. But at the end of the night, the commission looked at it as a 7-0 unanimous vote, all in favor of this action.
You're one of the three co-sponsors. When did you and your cohorts start talking about this, and why did you think this was something you needed to do?
Well, I think it's a little different to how ours came. We had heard about this going on for some while, you know, some rumblings that happened throughout, but this came from citizens. It didn't come from the top down, per se. This came from sort of the bottom up, and it came from the citizens saying, hey, we want to do this. It's something we should take action on. So we started looking into it and what was happening, and then all of a sudden you see the momentum that was gained through several states, and then all of a sudden we did have the action that was going on in Virginia mm-hmm. to kind of give us some a symbol of what was happening across the country. So that was really how this all really got started.
Aside from that gun rally they had last weekend in Virginia, explain Virginia's connection to this in your mind.
Well, I think it was just the eyeball test of what the people who do support it were coming out, but I also think the way that the political realm has come out of what happens in politics in that particular state has sort of changed things about what people's feelings are about maybe being infringed upon. What is happening there is oftentimes a perception to what the rule is. So people started talking to us about, hey, how do we become a sanctuary city to uphold what's happening in the Constitution? As my oath that I've taken in office was to uphold the Constitution. So that's what we were holding very dear and trying to find out how we could make some stances in this. But I think ours is a little different than a lot of people across the states that you see who have actually put this sanctuary in. We put it to where we would not have any particular funding to go and or use of our buildings and or facility outside of employees. We'd not do that either. The sheriff spoke last night in Gaston County, who is a Democrat, spoke up in favor of what is happening as far as sanctuary city. But there's also an oath there that they take to make sure they uphold the laws of what's happened. We understand that federal law and state law kind of supersedes what's happening on the level of taking guns or being able to infringe on that Constitution if it were to come about. But this was more of a stance that we're saying, hey, we're here. We're not going to go down without looking at something more than what's happening.
So you're saying the language in your resolution takes it further than most of the other resolutions that have been passed around the state.
That is correct.
And the paragraph that you're referring to reads as follows. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Gaston County Board of Commissioners, one, that the Gaston County Board of Commissioners hereby expresses its intent to uphold the Second Amendment rights of the citizens of Gaston County, and that public funds, resources, employees, buildings, or offices not be used to restrict Second Amendment rights or to aid or assist in the enforcement of the unnecessary and unconstitutional restriction of the rights under the Second Amendment of the citizens of Gaston County to keep and bear arms. We'll parse that a little bit later on in the program. This seems to be a rapidly growing movement, if that's the right word for it, Darrell Miller, around the country. I think, and it's changing in North Carolina almost every day. So I think the number is 19 or 20 of North Carolina's 100 counties now have these resolutions in place. Do we know how many other counties or cities around the country are doing the same thing, Darrell?
I mean, it is. It's definitely taken flight. I think one of the early states, or at least the localities, was in Illinois, and now I think there's more than 400 municipalities or local governments in 20 states have passed resolutions like the one that just passed in Gaston County. New Mexico, for example, has 30 of its 33 county sheriffs announcing their support for gun sanctuaries, for example. So it's definitely taken flight. It bears repeating that these are local governments. It's not a nose count of people. So that's an important point to make. But you can't discount the fact that many local governments, especially in more rural areas, have enacted these sanctuary provisions, and it's taken flight even across across state lines, as we saw between Virginia and North Carolina.
What's happening in the zeitgeist that's causing this to causing folks to feel that this is a necessary step?
That's a really good question. I suspect that it is it is another iteration of the divide in America that's not only political, red blue, but also geographical between rural and urban centers, and to the extent that you have transitions of power from Republican control in some states like Virginia to Democratic control in the state legislature, I think that rural communities feel that their culture, their things that they value are at risk, and so this is a way of demonstrating that they feel that that things are changing in a way that they don't agree with.
Christy Clark, you are a representative of District 98. That's the northern part of Mecklenburg County, which includes Cornelius and Davidson and Huntersville. You were involved prior to being in the House. You were leading efforts on minimizing gun violence through Moms Demand Action. When you were outside of the legislature and going to the legislature to talk to people on both sides of the aisle about guns and about your desire to have some sort of laws in place to lessen violence, how would you describe the results of those interactions?
You know, from the beginning, when Moms Demand Action was founded in 2012, the legislature changed in 2010. So in 2013, a sweeping gun law passed, and there wasn't a lot of opposition to it from outside advocacy groups. But following that, Moms Demand Action, Every Town for Gun Safety, became very active in North Carolina, and that organization was able to weekend a bill that passed in 2015, and then following that, no gun bill has ever passed that would loosen gun laws in the state. And that, of course, it also includes that no gun laws also passed to strengthen gun laws in the state.
But when you were talking to people, politicians on both sides of the aisle, was there a different reception that you received depending upon whether they were an R or a D?
You know, of course there is. You know, the NRA and Grassroots North Carolina have a strong influence over the General Assembly. But there were some outliers in the General Assembly. There were eight that helped us in 2015 that were opposed to loosening gun laws, and for a variety of reasons. And they supported us and helped us. And now that I'm in the legislature and I talk to people, you know, behind the scenes, I know there are a lot of people that are worried about the gun violence that's happening in North Carolina and worry about mass shootings, and also worried about being a legislator and not taking any action to do anything to stop or prevent
them. You represent
them.
A portion of Mecklenburg County, which is unlikely to pass a resolution like this for several reasons. A, we're urban, and B, it's the county commission is controlled by Democrats, and that they don't seem to be as urgently. They don't feel the urgency, let's just put it that way. But you represent a district that is bordered very closely by Cabarrus County, which recently declared itself to be a Second Amendment sanctuary county. So there must be some political, I mean, literally, you cross a line and they have a resolution and you don't. There must be some political spillover from that county to your county. Do you think your constituents feel more like the people in Cabarrus County feel, or more like you feel?
You know, I haven't heard anything from my constituents about these so-called Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions. I'm sure that there are people in Mecklenburg County that would like to have them. But, you know, as in general, these resolutions have no impact on the law and they have no meaning. And in general, they are political statements to help push forward an agenda that that is to loosen gun laws in the state. But, you know, when there's seven North Carolinians dying, or North Carolinians dying every 7 hours in the state from gun violence, you know, we have a duty to protect them and do what's right around gun laws, and passing these resolutions and insisting that we won't enforce them means that people will die from gun violence and suicide more than they are right now.
What about that, Chad Brown?
Well, I'll say this. You know, the question was asked of what is infringing to start this. I mean, it's very evident that when you look at Chicago, some of the strictest gun laws in our country were put in place, has the highest murder rate.
That's actually not true. St. Louis actually has the highest murder rate from gun violence in the country right now. Chicago is down to about 25th.
Well, 25th out of, really, if we're going to compare apples, I think that's one of the apples we don't want to compare of how the violence has started on those places. It has one of the highest murder rates. It had put into place the strictest gun laws that you could see. This is not about what's happening. It's about how the left has tried to infringe upon those rights, and that's one of the things the Constitution talks about, and it very explicitly states upon infringing on our rights. So that's one of the things that, why you think about Gaston County, we started that for a reason, to make sure that those weren't infringed upon our people.
Well, that takes us back to what I said at the very beginning about the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution, which quotes the fact that you, in order to, where is the quote here? I've got it here someplace. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. They mention the militia, and most people who are in favor of these kinds of regulations conveniently forget about militias. I think it's interesting that in the resolution that Gaston County wrote, you refer to the Second Amendment, I believe, to the state constitution. Is that right?
That's correct.
Which is slightly different. We'll talk about that when we come back with Chad Brown from the Gaston County Commission and Christy Clark from House District 98 and others. I'm Mike Collins. Once the dust settles on the voting in Iowa and New Hampshire, the Democratic race for president heads south.
Make no doubt about it, the road to the White House starts in South Carolina.
The first in the South primary has been pivotal in picking Democratic nominees. Will that be the case this year? Join Charlotte Talks for a preview of the upcoming vote. We'll be at Winthrop University's DiGiorgio Campus Center Wednesday, February 12th at 7 p.m. Register to attend and find more information at wfae.org/charlottetalks. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Second Amendment sanctuary locations in the country. Gaston County declared itself one just last night with a unanimous vote on the part of the Gaston County Commission, of which Chad Brown is a member, a former chair, and also one of the three co-sponsors of this resolution. Representative Christy Clark, a Democrat, joins us from House District 98, a former leader in the Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense movement. And Chad Brown is, Daryl Miller is with us, the Melvin G. Shim Professor of Law at Duke University. So in the Gaston County resolution that you passed last night, you don't quote the U.S. Second Amendment. You quote the constitutional amendment in North Carolina, which also happens to be our Second Amendment, and it's worded slightly differently. It says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, and as standing armies in time of peace are dangerous to liberty, they shall not be maintained, and the military shall be kept under strict subordination to and governed by the civil power. Nothing herein shall justify the practice of carrying concealed weapons or prevent the General Assembly from enacting penal statutes against that practice. Why did you choose to quote our Constitution and not the Supreme Constitution, the U.S. Constitution?
Well, I think you look at a lot of how North Carolina was what we were trying to focus on, a lot of it, with the Constitution itself. Our oath is to North Carolina Constitution and also to the federal Constitution. So as a whole, we wanted to do something that really stood up to where the citizens who brought this to us, who talked about wanting to make it a bottom-up type of initiative, but we wanted to have something that we could put in place that really enacted some of the things that people would understand what's happening here, not just because we talk a lot about Virginia and how that issue was going on. We wanted to talk about North Carolina. We want to talk about Gaston County. That's where we started putting in for some of the funding, because those are the things that we can control. A lot of people keep saying, well, you can't do this because of federal and state law. These are the things that we wanted to try to push to show that we were enacting on our own, to try to find out the option, because we do want to make sure that we're good spirits and good stewards of the Constitution.
The Second Amendment of the North Carolina Constitution is a little, I don't really understand it, but it's a slightly different from the federal Second Amendment. But Daryl, I'm not sure if you're a constitutional scholar, but it always seems that when people look at the Second Amendment as a defense for everybody's right to carry a firearm, they forget about the first part of that clause, the need for a militia. No state has a militia, unless you want to consider the National Guard a militia, and no state requires people, if they want to own a gun, to go to militia practice every week or two or every month or so. So what do you think constitutional scholars believe the founders had in mind when they phrased that amendment that way?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've tapped into something really important, which is the militia clause of the federal Second Amendment, the federal Constitution. That has been eclipsed by the latter portion of that amendment in a case called the District of Columbia versus Heller in 2008. So prior to 2008, even sort of leading conservative luminaries like Robert Bork and Chief Justice Berger had thought that the Second Amendment only applied to the militia, but that actually changed in 2008 when, in a case called District of Columbia versus Heller, the Supreme Court of the United States said that the right to keep and bear arms protects a personal right to have them for personal purposes like self-defense in the home. And so notwithstanding what the Second Amendment says, the way it's been interpreted since 2008 is to guarantee a personal individual right. Now, that doesn't mean that all regulations are unconstitutional. In fact, that opinion still allows lots of regulations, including keeping guns out of the hands of felons and the mentally ill. But I guess the real question about these resolutions, and especially the one in Gaston County, which talks about not using any funds or buildings or other things, is what would it change in terms of the existing set of regulations?
What would it change, Chad?
Well, I think it when you look at it as a whole, we're just stating that we're not going to provide any sources of help. So the National Guard would probably be the one that would have to come inside of the North Carolina regulations, which the state puts out. But we would not house anything. We would not fund any employees, because that would all have to keep going through our sheriff, of course, who is he has his own funding.
Well, help me understand this, because in the last clause you talk about no public funds, resources, employees, buildings, or office can be used to restrict Second Amendment rights. So are you saying that an organization like Christy Clark's former organization, the Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense, could not take a room in one of your public buildings for a meeting?
If it's going to infringe on anything that has to do with the Second Amendment rights of the citizen, then no. We would not be funding anything, nor letting anybody who's employee funding. So you think about outside of the sheriff, we have a difference. We have a county police in Gaston County, mm-hmm. So we have two separate law enforcement agencies. One of them has its own budget and set of force, so that would have to be inside of their own sheriff's department, but we would not fund anything or let any housing of any of that equipment or anything to come inside of Gaston County that we would fund. That's the only way we can stop things, is through what we fund and what we don't.
Okay. So your resolution also asserts that, quote, criminal misuse of firearms is not a reason to infringe on the rights of law-abiding citizens, which speaks to what Christy Clark was talking about a few minutes ago. In Cleveland County, Commissioner Johnny Hutchins has said, quote, we are only a generation away from losing a lot of our freedoms. They have a Second Amendment sanctuary resolution in place. Do you agree with him? Only a generation away from losing a lot of our freedoms?
I would say yes. The liberal left has come and tried to chip away at any part of the Constitution they can. As they continue to chip away, I look at it as a foundation of a house. The Constitution is a foundation of our country.
Mm-hmm.
The house, if you chip away, eventually it's going to crumble. And right now, the left is trying to push these in issues on to what's happening in America.
Give me an example of that.
You look at what happened. I just use Beto O'Rourke for one, who's running for mm-hmm. for president. He said it. His quote was, "He's going to take your guns."
Yes, he did.
So that infringes upon the Second Amendment if he were to come into power and want to do that. So if he were to get the power and say, "Hey, I want to push this into legislation,"
but he doesn't have the power.
But that's why. Okay. We're one generation away.
Yeah.
So
okay,
if he were to be the next president, then we're sitting on the precipice of the next generation away.
Can I interject? This is
sure.
So again, one of the important things to remember is that District Columbia versus Heller, the Supreme Court of the United States, said that people have an individual right to keep and bear arms for personal purposes. That's a constitutional right. I and my co-author Joseph Bloker are on the record saying we don't see any prospect of the Supreme Court overturning the Heller decision. There's no indication that the personnel on the court would change that. Even if you had a president that sort of announced I want to do X, they still have to contend with Heller and the Constitution of the United States.
I don't want to put words in Chad Brown's mouth, but he's a Republican and you're a Democrat, Christy, and you may be one of the people he's talking about when he talks about the liberal left. And I know that you have in your background this need. You want to pass gun safety legislation. Among them, I would imagine that you are in favor of background checks.
Absolutely.
Waiting rec periods.
Sure.
The red flag laws that would allow law enforcement to take people's guns temporarily if they appear to be somebody who might endanger themselves or others. You're in favor of all of those things, correct?
Yes.
Most Americans are in favor of
Absolutely.
Those things. But how do you convince gun owners and Second Amendment right staunch defenders that these are not the slippery slope to taking everything away?
Sure. Well, you know, one important point is that these types of laws that you just mentioned have been upheld to be constitutional by courts around the country. So when you think of it in that regard, they are constitutional and do support the Second Amendment. And then, as you mentioned, the majority of Americans support background checks. It's about, around 90% of Americans and like 75% of gun owners support a background check on the sale of all guns. So when you're talking about saving lives and you want to enact gun laws that do that, you look at the data and it shows that background checks work. red flag laws that are newly enacted, they're is showing that they work to protect people and reduce suicides in states that have them. So that's the goal, right? It's to stop gun violence. It's to save lives. And, you know, North Carolina is the 22nd highest rate of gun violence in the country.
Do you support the Second Amendment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I was raised in Southwest Virginia. My granddaddy taught me to shoot guns in his backyard, and we shot at tin cans.
Do you own one?
I do not own one, but I'm sure in the course of my life, I will probably inherit a few from my father and father-in-law. And that's fine.
You know, so why do you think his side of the equation, and he's not alone in this, believe so strongly that the left is really coming after the Second Amendment?
So this is going to be an unpopular opinion with Mr. Brown, but what it really boils down to is the NRA. The NRA is having a hard time because they are losing funding from their primary funders, which is gun manufacturers and ammunition manufacturers. And the reason of that is that we're having what they call the Trump effect. Fewer people are buying guns right now because they know that under a Donald Trump presidency, there won't be any gun laws passed. And so they have to come up with a way to encourage people to purchase firearms. And one way is to concoct this scheme of Second Amendment sanctuaries.
50 members of the Republican House caucus in the North Carolina State House, including Speaker Tim Moore and Majority Leader John Bell, signed a letter in support of those who want these Second Amendment sanctuaries. To date, they haven't done anything that would be viewed as curtailing rights in terms of passing red flag laws, but you and other Democrats proposed two regulatory bills. They didn't move forward in committees and did not make it to a floor debate. What did those bills entail, and are those bills cause for concern by people on the other side?
Well, they shouldn't be cause for concern because they are primarily elements that would have been shown by data and science to reduce gun violence. The red flag law bill was one that we did a discharge petition to try and get a Republican support on that to have it heard on the House floor. No Republicans came forward and supported it publicly, but behind the scenes, they said to us that that's something they could get behind. And that really was an important reflection of the UNC Charlotte shooting. We had one of the victims come and testify at a press conference there, and he raised his shirt and showed his scars and let everyone know, like, this is the true cost of gun violence in this state. And so when people saw that, it really personally impacted them. And that's really why I'm an advocate for gun law reform, as I have over the course of my time as a volunteer, interacted with several survivors of gun violence, and I know how the damage does and what the hurt causes.
Your resolution aside, what gun laws would you be willing to tolerate?
Well, I think you look at this as a whole. A responsible gun owner, as you talk about how you grew up in West Virginia and doing things, those are responsible gun owners. What you're talking about is a mass shooting. You talk about suicide. These are all mental capacity issues, which are already
so on
the
books.
Would
you be in favor of red flag laws?
No.
And
why not? And the reason the red flag laws, because these are the things that end up changing. So let's just say I didn't agree with Ms. Clark and what she was talking about, and I wanted to call somebody. I said, you know what? I want to call. And you say, assuming you had a gun, I said, you know, I want to call the sheriff and say, hey, I don't really like what she's saying. I don't like what she's doing. Let's go take her guns from her and infringe upon her because I didn't like something she said or something she did. If we knew each other better, if I was a family member. So there's a lot of pieces of that infringement. But the one thing that they keep coming back to, and they always want to say it, the NRA. The movement that you saw in Virginia, the movement that we've seen in North Carolina, the movement you've seen across the nation on the Second Amendment, if the NRA had as many members have been to attend these meetings and or what's happened across, this would be the greatest organization you could ever think about because it would have so many people. The NRA is a big faction, don't get me wrong, and I am a member.
They are the strongest lobbying organization in the country.
Maybe the strongest lobbying organization, but at the end of the day, it comes back to the liberal judge could change any part of that. Now, I'm not saying that when I say the liberal left, that didn't include you because I don't know where you stand on a lot of these issues. But you have some, I'll say, older blue dog Democrats who really have no home. I remember one gentleman I've already met used to be the former Mecklenburg Democrat Party chair. He kind of has no home right now.
There are a lot of Republicans that don't have homes right now.
Exactly. So you have a lot of that middle ground that are talking about this. So I didn't want to push you into something that he said about the liberal left. I say the liberal left because those are the ones who are trying to make sure that some changes happen.
So, Daryl Miller, in June, you wrote that in some states, not North Carolina, but in some states, law enforcement is already incentivized, at least at some level, to not enforce gun laws in some scenarios. What did you mean by that?
Right. So, I mean, this has to do with the practical effect of some of these sanctuary declarations or sheriff statements, which is they're already in a position where how would you detect a sheriff, for example, that ends up not doing a thorough background check and then issuing a concealed carry license? There's not a real oversight mechanism to see whether or not a sheriff or other local government official isn't sort of undermining whatever the existing legal rules are. And if they make a mistake and don't issue a license to somebody that should get something, in some jurisdictions they can be sued and held to account civilly. So it feels like that the system is already stacked against a sort of vigorous enforcement of any kind of gun regulation, because all the risks of error are fall on the liability of the government official, whereas risks of mistakenly issuing licenses or not enforcing laws are hard to detect.
Gaston County's resolution, Chad Brown, vows that public money, resources, employees, or facilities will not be used to enforce any, quote, unnecessary and unconstitutional, end quote, restriction of Second Amendment rights. Who determines which restrictions are unconstitutional or unnecessary?
Well, I think it comes back to the end of the day. We do have a sheriff who would absolutely, by the Constitution, have to uphold those laws. What we would do is take away the monies that were funded for that by what we deemed, or the public is a what the actual action would be. We don't know what that action would be.
But the board, the county commission,
right,
would
make county
that
commission
decision.
But let's just say it was, and it could change. That could change in any day from a Republican board. We do have a Republican leadership there as the county commission, but it could change at any time through the vote of the people. Hmm. But I think after you look at last night's vote on that, the people of Gaston County were overwhelming in support of what we were doing to be a part of that, and it's just something we did.
Chad Brown is a member of the Gaston County Commission and one of the lead sponsors of the resolution that passed last night. Daryl Miller is a professor of law at Duke University, and Christy Clark is a Democrat in House District 98. We'll continue and share some comments that have coming in from listeners as we've been talking when we come back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Chad Brown is with us, Gaston County Commissioner, Republican. Christy Clark, Democrat from House District 98. Gaston County just passed a resolution unanimously last night declaring Gaston County a Second Amendment sanctuary. Daryl Miller joins us by phone. He's a professor of law at the Duke University and co-director of Duke's Center for Firearms Law. Christy, you say that sheriffs and county commissions are opposing laws, I guess through these resolutions, that the courts have repeatedly upheld against constitutional challenges. What laws are you talking about?
Specifically, the background check and the red flag laws. Those have been brought forward mainly by the NRA again, or gun rights extremists who sue, and they have been defended vigorously, and the courts have ruled that they are constitutional.
So if the General Assembly were to pass this red flag law that Governor Cooper has suggested, or if they were to pass background checks or other gun control laws, would Gaston County refuse to enforce them?
By what we would do, if it had any funding to do with something to a building or anything that we could that we have to have funding for. So let's just say if it were anything in the red flag, the biggest piece of the how I can say we would not be a part of that, but it has no due process. So if you think about
not
due
true.
Process at the end of that, due process comes with someone who is getting the chance to speak on their behalf.
But, you know, if you defy the legislature, they can dissolve you in a nanosecond. We learned that in Mecklenburg County pretty clearly.
That would be unreasonable, of course. But, yeah. Red flag laws do have due process. They're an ex parte hearing, just like in a domestic violence hearing. And you can come before a judge usually within, a week or 10 days if you're the gun owner and get to have what your say about the situation. And that is due process. And if it's been incorrectly brought forward, if someone was falsely charging or suggesting that someone have their guns removed, they too will be subject to a penalty because it is illegal to falsely charge someone in a red flag law.
So let me share some things that have come in from listeners while we've been talking. Michelle on Facebook says, what does it say that guns are protected more than people? Surely we can find middle ground here. Aren't both sides keen on people's safety? What about that? Because you're not alone. There are 20 counties in North Carolina who have passed these resolutions saying we will not defend gun laws. We will do what we want and we will not infringe on people's right to own or carry guns. So what about people's safety? Where are their rights in this?
You talk about people's safety. You talk about mental capacity of that. We're talking about law-abiding citizens who are carrying guns, who have had a check, who have gone to the sheriff's department to get some type of licensing for this. So all these things come back to the mental issue of it. I own many guns. I don't want to come out. I don't want to shoot anybody. I hope I never have to fire at anyone. I do it for sport. I do it for game. But if I have to fire at someone, it's going to be in protection of myself or my rights. And I don't understand how this keeps getting pushed into, obviously, no one who's a gun owner, responsible gun owner, wants to see any mass shooting, wants to see anything terrible happen. If we could have the perfect life, no one would ever come out here and fire their gun at another person. But we look at where the strictest gun laws are enforced. There's more killings than any place in America.
Not true.
It is true.
The states that have the strongest gun laws have lower gun violence than other states that don't. It's a fact. You can look it up. It's the states that have the strongest gun laws have a lower, and you can't use Chicago anymore. They actually have instituted stronger gun laws in their city, and they have seen a decline in gun violence over time. Now, if you're going to talk about St. Louis, which does have the highest amount of gun violence in their city, guess what happened in Missouri? They repealed all of their gun laws there. And so you don't have to have a background check or any training to conceal carry there. And so the ultimate impact is they've seen a rise in gun violence in that state, and it was direct correlation to the repealing of their gun laws.
So Todd on Facebook writes, I like it. If cities and towns can declare themselves sanctuary cities for lawbreakers, then doing it for law abiders is only right. And I think he's referring to the sanctuary cities that are becoming sanctuary cities for immigrants, and that, which leads me to some questions here, because there are sheriff departments governing bodies saying it's okay for them not to cooperate with ICE on the 287G program and others. Mecklenburg County is one of those counties that no longer cooperates with ICE on that. Is it accurate, Darrell, to say that the difference between immigration sanctuary cities and Second Amendment sanctuary cities is that local governments by law are under no obligation to enforce federal immigration policies, but that Second Amendment sanctuary sheriffs could be ignoring the rule of law in their states if and when those states pass background checks and red flag laws and waiting period laws?
Yeah, I mean, it's different. The general rule applies whatever the federal priority is. So there's a case called Prince that says that the federal government can't enlist a local sheriff to do background checks under the federal program. But states, when they pass their laws, that they're different. So it doesn't matter if it's immigration law or gun laws. You can't make a local government official, like a sheriff, enforce a federal law. But this is different because the premise here is, in addition to saying that the local government won't enforce the federal law, they're also saying they won't enforce the state law, or at least some portion of the state law. And that's usually not permitted. Usually the general rules that states can do with their counties and municipalities what they want, as we saw with House Bill 2.
Christy, in reference to sheriffs refusing to enforce safer gun ordinances under the guise of the Second Amendment resolutions, you say this would be a step toward lawlessness and that sheriffs are charged with enforcing the laws, not deciding for themselves whether they're constitutional. Well, here in Mecklenburg County, in Wake County, I think in Durham County, in other counties, urban counties in North Carolina, sheriffs have decided not to cooperate with ICE. How is that different?
Well, you know, the 287G and ICE program, those are optional programs. You opt into them. You don't opt in to state laws and the Constitution. That's part of what you swore an oath to uphold both of those. You know, so that is, there's a difference there.
Are these resolutions, Daryl, that are being passed here in North Carolina and around the country, are they merely symbolic? Are they warning flags to those who may be considering gun legislation, don't tread on me? Or do they have the potential of rule of law? Can county commissions and city councils enforce this?
Right. Well, I mean, I think they're definitely sort of political statements. They're political statements that is designed to brush back any regulation that might come from the state. I think in terms of the enforcement, it really depends on what we're talking about. What we're dancing around here is when a law is deemed by some party at the local level to infringe the Second Amendment, what does that mean? Does that mean that the sheriff now can just issue licenses to whomever asks for it without doing a background check? Is that what we're talking about? Or are we talking about just freezing the status quo and saying the existing regulations are okay, but no new regulations are okay? I just don't know exactly what the practical purpose of the announcements are when it comes to the decision making of local officials.
Joshua on Twitter writes, a sanctuary from what? Are we building an actual church to worship guns?
Well, I think at the end of the day, you know, we talked about Chicago, we talked about St. Louis, we forgot about Colorado, we forgot about New Mexico, we forgot about a lot of places. Criminals do not obey laws. That's the obvious choice there. You think about it, Republican, Democrat. We have one of the greatest Democrat sheriffs in Gaston County, Alan Cloninger, who is a Democrat, the only elected Democrat, upholds 287G, upholds the Second Amendment, and does a lot for what's happening. So you talk about crossing borders and bringing people together and doing the right thing. I think at the end of the day, Gaston County is able to do that by what we're able to achieve crossing the aisle.
But there are, I will bet you, if you look at the criminal history of these people who have been, who are mass shooters, who killed the guy who killed all those people in Las Vegas, he never committed a crime until he pulled the trigger in Las Vegas. Same is probably true of a lot of the people who have committed crimes with guns over the years. So law-abiding citizens commit murder, period.
So the argument that, you know, criminals don't follow laws doesn't really hold any water with me, because that does that mean we should just repeal all the laws we have and say, forget it, we don't need laws about shoplifting, we don't need laws about anything? Well, that's not what we do here. So it's kind of ironic that the party that's the rule of law party is trying to say, like, criminals don't follow laws, so we shouldn't have them or have to follow them. But what's true about mass shootings in relation to mental health is most of them show warning signs in advance of their mass shooting. And so if there was a red flag law in place in some of those instances, we would have been able to save lives.
A lot of people on your side of the equation, Chad Brown, who are in favor of protecting gun rights, point to the liberal left, to use your words, as threatening those rights in the future, and now and in the future. And it's going to get worse and worse and worse if something isn't done to stop it. I had a question and it's gone. You smiled at me and the question went away.
Hey, maybe I have that effect. I'll go back to what you're saying here. You talk about, you know, the shooting in Las Vegas. Once he broke the law, then the law has to step in. We wouldn't have, our jails would not be full of criminals if they all were law-abiding citizens, regardless whether it be with a gun, a knife, or whatever it may be. The problem is criminals do not follow law. They're never going to follow law as far as what they want to do, because they don't have the capacity to say that this is right or wrong, because they all look at it as saying, hey, I'm going to try to get advantage of what they can do for themselves. I think at the end of the day, the law stops the killings. You think about this church shooting that happened just in Texas, to where the gentleman opened fire on two people, killing them, and a gentleman with a gun and a concealed carry permit stopped this, to where it was not even a bigger shooting. So the mental capacity has to be dealt with by either the legislature has to come back and do something about this and really get really strict in federal government as well. Until we're going to make a change in this country, we have to deal with mental illness.
Yeah, an important point about the man in the church that had the concealed carry permit. He was also a retired law enforcement officer, and he is a trainer at gun ranges, so he has extraordinary skills, and not every person who conceals carry has extraordinary skills. I know people who have them, who took the class, who shot two times, and now they have a gun on their purse, and they're walking around, and I personally would not feel comfortable with them trying to defend me.
Let's say he wasn't there. How about the 16 other people who had guns in that church to stop this? That's the problem. You think about an invasion of our country on the mainland, I would say, what's happening in our own government, people don't want to come and try to invade here because they don't know who has guns. Why can we not just sit here and say, hey, gun laws are made to protect? Responsible gun owners are not going to come out here. I'm not trying to walk down the street. I don't want to kill anybody. I can guarantee a police officer doesn't go to work and say, hey, I want to kill someone.
All right, I don't want to get into a battle about gun laws. I wanted to talk about these resolutions that are going up around the country, including in Gaston County. And our state, Darrell, has looked unkindly on municipalities that would declare themselves immigration sanctuaries, but it's clear that they will look kindly on areas of this state that declare themselves Second Amendment sanctuaries. We hear that from the leadership in the House. Is that the same in most counties around most states around the country, or are we going to see yet another battle in this culture war?
Right. Well, I mean, the general proposition is it doesn't matter what the political ideology of the issue is. The general rule is that states get to do with local governments what they want. So it doesn't matter if you want to ban trash bags, or if you want to ban recreational vehicles. If the state usually gets the power to preempt what the local governments are doing. The thing about this is that the charged nature of the politics makes everything flip. So it's worth mentioning that in states that are very gun-friendly, like Florida, they use the preemptive power of the state to punish local governments that end up passing gun safety regulations. It's just the reverse polarity of the politics here. But the general principle about state-local relations is, absent the constitution of the state, generally the states get to do with the local governments what they want.
I have 90 seconds left. Here and elsewhere, proponents, usually Republicans, see these resolutions as a protection to the Second Amendment rights of the Constitution. Democrats see these resolutions as unnecessary and perhaps even dangerous. But are they legal? Are they legal or illegal, Darrell, do you think?
Well, I mean, they're legal. I mean, there's nothing that keeps the local government from announcing what its policy preferences are. I think the proof is in the pudding, which is, well, what does this mean in terms of practicalities? That is, if the state says you can't carry guns into schools, and you have a local government official in a sanctuary county that says, I think that's unconstitutional, and I'm going to allow people to bring guns into schools, and I'm not going to arrest them when they do so, is there any consequence for that? And that's the open question about the resolutions, is their practical effect. How are they going to play out?
In 30 seconds or less, can you have both gun protections and gun control?
Absolutely. That's the framing that you had earlier, which is every decision about gun safety is automatically a diminution of the Second Amendment, isn't right. Heller itself says that. Nobody is saying that that the Second Amendment it infringes on the rights of felons to get guns. That's just it's a false binary.
Daryl Miller is professor of law at Duke University, co-director of Duke Center for Firearms Law. Chad Brown is a member of the Gaston County Commission, and Representative Christy Clark is with House District 98 in the General Assembly. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.